Monday morning.
This is VOA News. I'm Marissa Melton. Rescuers on Thursday recovered more bodies buried under tons of mud after a landslide crashed into a hilly Indonesian village, raising the number of dead to more than 20. AP correspondent Karen Chamas.
Over a dozen rescuers crowd around a newly discovered body, drenched in mud in a village on Indonesia's remote Natuna Islands. The men lift the body into a body bag before carrying it off into a truck. Authorities have deployed more than 200 rescuers to search for over 30 people still missing. Many were apparently trapped in houses that were buried under the landslide, which according to officials was 13 feet deep. The search and rescue operation has been hampered by heavy rains around the disaster site, as the weather has forced the search effort to be halted several times. I'm Karen Chamas.
In China, Xi Jinping was handed a norm-busting third term as president on Friday, capping a rise that has seen him become China's most powerful leader in generations. The appointment by Beijing's parliament comes after he locked in another 5 years as head of the Communist Party and the military, the two more significant leadership positions in Chinese politics, in October. Russian strikes knocked out power in Ukraine's second-largest city, Kharkiv, on Thursday. The regional governor of Kharkiv said Thursday his city in northeastern Ukraine had been hit by about 15 S-300 ballistic missiles, which Ukraine is unable to intercept. He said civilian infrastructure was among the targets. Traffic lights weren't working, and the noise of power generators was heard on the streets of Kharkiv. Local residents gathered next to a power charging point, known in Ukraine as an invincibility point, to charge their phones off of a power generator. The mass strikes on targets far from the front were the first such wave since mid-February. VOA News. A letter claiming to be from the Mexican drug cartel blamed for kidnapping four Americans and killing two of them condemns the violence. AP's Ed Donahue has more.
In a letter obtained by the AP, the Scorpions faction of the Gulf Cartel apologized to the people of Matamoros, where the Americans were kidnapped, the Mexican woman who died in the cartel shootout, and the four Americans and their families. The letter says those who were directly involved went against the cartel rules that include respecting the life and well-being of the innocent and were turned over to police. A photograph of five bound men face down on the pavement accompanied the letter. Jerry Wallace, a cousin of one of the Americans kidnapped, says he does not accept any apologies. It doesn't change the suffering they went through. I'm Ed Donahue.
Authorities say a Norfolk Southern train has derailed in Alabama. AP correspondent Norman Hall has that story.
A Norfolk Southern train derailed in East Central Alabama, but company and local officials say there is no threat to the public. The Alabama accident came on the same day Norfolk Southern CEO testified before Congress about the impact of a hazardous materials train derailment in Ohio. The derailment in Calhoun County, northeast of Birmingham, involved about 37 train cars. A company spokesman said none of the cars carried hazardous materials, but two of them are considered residue cars because they previously contained hazardous materials. They were not compromised. I'm Norman Hall.
Danish police have searched for a yacht on a tiny Baltic Sea island near the Nord Stream pipeline blast sites, according to a local administrator. German authorities confirmed they had raided a ship in January that may have been used to transport explosives used to blow up the pipelines. The September 26 explosions on the Nord Stream pipelines have become a flashpoint between the West and Russia. After last year's Russian invasion of Ukraine, the pipeline was constructed to supply Russian natural gas to Europe. Authorities in Sweden, Germany, and Denmark are investigating the blasts. Several people were reported dead, with others injured after a shooting in the northern German city of Hamburg, officials said on Thursday. A shooting took place at a Jehovah's Witness center in the Grossbürstel district around 9 p.m. local time. According to German media reports, at least seven people were killed in the shooting. An attacker opened fire in central Tel Aviv on Thursday in a suspected terrorist attack, wounding three people before being neutralized by Israeli police. Large numbers of police and medical workers rushed to Dizengoff Street in the heart of the city, where the gunman carried out the attack. A street-side restaurant was left empty after customers apparently fled the scene in the middle of their meals. Marissa Melton, VOA News.
Today is Friday, March 10th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, power cuts in Ukraine after waves of Russian missiles knock out key infrastructure.
The first big volley of missile strikes since mid-February shattered the longest period of comparative calm since Moscow began a campaign to attack Ukraine's civil infrastructure 5 months ago.
Concern rises over declining global freedom for media organizations.
Inadequate protections, intimidation, and even violence against journalists has left media freedom at risk in at least 157 countries and territories.
And Western nations mull whether to censure Iran over its nuclear program. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Russia launched a huge wave of missile strikes across Ukraine while people slept on Thursday, killing at least six civilians, knocking out electricity, and forcing a nuclear power plant off the grid. Lauren Anthony of Reuters reports.
The majority of those fatalities, five, were in western Lviv, where drone footage showed a flattened home surrounded by badly damaged buildings. A body in a black bag was carried out of the rubble. Another civilian was reported killed by the missiles in the central Dnipro region. Three civilians were separately reported killed by artillery in Kherson. In the capital, Kyiv, residents like Ludmila were woken by the strikes.
I heard a very loud explosion, very loud. We quickly jumped out of bed and saw one car on fire. Then the other cars caught on fire as well. The glass shattered on the balconies and windows. It's very frightening. Very frightening. The child got scared and jumped out of bed.
The first big volley of missile strikes since mid-February shattered the longest period of comparative calm since Moscow began a campaign to attack Ukraine's civil infrastructure 5 months ago. Moscow says its campaign of targeting Ukraine's infrastructure far from the front is intended to reduce its ability to fight. Russia's defense ministry said the, quote, massive retaliatory strike on Ukrainian infrastructure was payback for a cross-border raid last week on a Russian village. Kyiv said the airstrikes have no military purpose and aim to harm and intimidate civilians, a war crime. The strike knocked out the power supply to the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant, Europe's largest, severing it from the Ukrainian grid.
How can we sit here?
The UN nuclear watchdog chief, Rafael Grossi, on Thursday appealed for a protection zone around the Russian-held plant.
Zaporizhia nuclear power plant is running on emergency diesels. The last line of defense. This is the sixth time. Let me say it again. This is the sixth time that the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant has lost all off-site power and has had to operate in this emergency mode. Let me remind you, this is the largest nuclear power station in Europe, operating for the sixth time under emergency diesel generators. What are we doing?
Ukraine says an unprecedented six of Russia's small arsenal of Kinzhal hypersonic cruise missiles were used, one of Moscow's most valuable weapons. Ukraine has no way of shooting them down.
That's Lauren Anthony of Reuters, and the Republican majority House of Representatives launched an investigation into the Biden administration's decision to withdraw from Afghanistan in August 2021. Immigration experts and the U.S. military who assisted in the evacuation testified that the chaotic pullout was due to decades of bad decision-making. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more.
The final days of the U.S. conflict in Afghanistan were marked by chaos and death, as the rapid advance of the Taliban caught the U.S. military and State Department by surprise. House Foreign Affairs Committee Chairman Michael McCaul.
Because of the Biden administration's dereliction of duty, the world watched heartbreaking scenes unfold in and around the Kabul airport for the next 2 weeks.
Congressional Republicans are leading an investigation into the events of August 2021. Democrats argue that the groundwork for the chaotic withdrawal was laid by previous presidential administrations. Democratic Representative Gregory Meeks.
In the years preceding the 2021 withdrawal, the decision to engage and the direct negotiations with the Taliban at the exclusion of the Afghan government and the invitation to meet at Camp David conferred international legitimacy to the Taliban.
Congress is also asking why there is a backlog in processing visas for the tens of thousands of Afghans promised safety in return for assisting U.S. forces. Peter Lussier works for Team America Relief, an organization that has helped support evacuation efforts.
This is not the story of a Biden failure or a Trump failure. This is a story of an American failure and the effect it has had and continues to have on Afghans.
Ultimately, about 122,000 people were airlifted out of Afghanistan in the days before the handover to the Taliban. But the immigration status for those Afghans who made it to the U.S. is still uncertain, and tens of thousands remain trapped in Afghanistan. Allied Airlift 21's Francis Q. Hahn.
We wept as we listened to messages left by children pleading for our help.
U.S. service members also testified that unclear rules of engagement at Kabul Airport left them defenseless and alleged that ultimately led to the August 26 bombing, the deadliest day for Americans in Afghanistan in 10 years. U.S. Marine Corps Sergeant Tyler Vargas Andrews.
The withdrawal was a catastrophe, in my opinion, and there was an inexcusable lack of accountability and negligence. The 11 Marines, one sailor, and one soldier that were murdered that day have not been answered for.
U.S. lawmakers say the secretaries of state and defense will soon be asked to testify about their department's roles in the evacuation. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you, Catherine. And Western nations are mulling whether to censure Iran over its nuclear program as a meeting of the International Atomic Energy Agency, the United Nations nuclear watchdog, takes place in Vienna this week. As Henry Ridgewell reports, the IAEA urgently wants Iran to explain the recent discovery of undeclared highly enriched uranium.
Iran said it would begin cooperating with an investigation into uranium particles found at undeclared sites in the country ahead of the week-long meeting of the International Atomic Energy Agency, or IAEA, board in Vienna. It followed a visit to the Iranian capital, Tehran, last week by IAEA chief Rafael Grossi.
It was the first time I could have a serious conversation with the president of Iran about these things. This has enormous importance. It's not promises. We do have certain agreements which are concrete.
Grossi said Iran would also allow the reinstallation of monitoring equipment at key nuclear sites, though details have not been agreed. The equipment was put in place under the 2015 nuclear deal, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or JCPOA, between Iran and six world powers. The equipment was removed last year as the deal unraveled following the United States' 2018 withdrawal from the JCPOA under then-President Donald Trump. Western nations warn that Iran is getting much closer to making a nuclear bomb. Tehran insists its nuclear activities are for civilian purposes. Last month, the IAEA said inspectors had found uranium particles enriched to 83.7% near weapons-grade purity at Iran's Fordo nuclear plant. Tehran has downplayed the find, saying it cannot be seen even under a microscope. Meanwhile, the IAEA said Iran's stockpile of uranium enriched to 60% had increased by just under half since its last quarterly meeting. Critics say the West must impose more penalties on Iran.
Behnam Bentaleblu is from the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies in Washington.
What we need to do now is to snap back and fully restore sanctions, particularly those that existed at the UN Security Council, from 2006 to 2010, that create a multilateral baseline for pressure, that have a permanent arms ban on the Islamic Republic, that have a permanent missile testing and transfer prohibition on the Islamic Republic.
The CIA said last month there was no evidence that Iran had decided to weaponize its enriched uranium, but it noted the country's nuclear program was growing at a worrisome pace. Israel, meanwhile, has said it will not allow Iran to develop a nuclear bomb.
Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said last week
Is it permissible for Iran, which openly calls for our destruction, to organize the tools of slaughter for our destruction? Are we forbidden from defending ourselves? We are obviously permitted to do this, and we are obviously doing it. In direct talks between the US and Iran to restore the 2015 nuclear deal broke down in September. Since then, the US and Europe have imposed further sanctions on Tehran following its violent crackdown on anti-government protests and its supply of military drones to Russia. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News.
Thank you, Harry. And in health news, Kenya this week rolled out a campaign using the world's first vaccine against malaria to inoculate more than 400,000 children against the mosquito-borne disease. Health officials say malaria kills more than 12,000 Kenyans each year and more than 500,000 people in sub-Saharan Africa, most of them children. The mass vaccination campaign comes as a new invasive species of mosquito has been found in Kenya and scientists fear it could reverse gains against the disease. Victoria Munga reports from Nairobi.
Diana Kavwai, a mother of two, recounts the day in 2019 when her son became sick. Kavwai says she tried home remedies to ease his fever, but he succumbed to malaria. He was just over a year old. She says his body was very hot and he was shaking. When he went to the hospital, examination showed that he had malaria, but it was too late. Kavwai says she believes the recent vaccination campaign for children under the age of two will help to protect them from the mosquito-borne disease, especially during rainy seasons. Kenya's government aims to vaccinate at least 300,000 children annually against malaria in a new initiative, particularly in the 8 malaria-prone regions. Pharmacist Lucy Meka, who leads immunization programs, says the vaccine, which was piloted in Kenya, Malawi and Ghana in 2019, has proven effective.
The prevalence of malaria is going down nationally to about 6%. Even in this lake endemic zone, you can see that it has gone down from 27% to 19%. And we see that the interventions that have been put in place for malaria are actually working.
Despite the progress, however, authorities now say a new mosquito vector, Anopheles stephensi, that Kenyan scientists recently detected in the country, is threatening gains made in the fight against malaria. The carrier, which was known to be in southern Asia, the Middle East and Arabian Peninsula, has the ability to thrive in urban areas and can breed in man-made containers. Kenya is closely monitoring its extent, as Meka explains.
The malaria program is looking into that. They are concerned about it and so that they are able to see if there are any interventions that need to be done above the current intervention. But as per the advice, that we continue with the current interventions that have been put in place for all the areas that are zoned out in the country.
In a 2022 report, the World Health Organization warned of a surge in mosquito-borne diseases due to global warming, which is increasing vector survival and biting rates. The WHO Technical Officer for Malaria Vaccines in Kenya, Adam Haji, told VOA that finding new ways to combat the disease is key.
There's a need and there's a requirement for the world to have new tools in order to put us back on track. And the malaria vaccine is one of these new tools.
Malaria interventions in Kenya have included distribution of mosquito nets, spraying and minimizing potential breeding grounds. Health authorities say they hope the vaccination initiatives will help eradicate the disease. Victoria Amunga for VOA News, Nairobi.
In other news, German police say that shots were fired inside a church in the northern city of Hamburg on Thursday night and that at least 6 people were killed and several seriously wounded. Police said on Twitter that the shooting took place in the Großbostel district, a few kilometers north of the downtown area of Germany's second biggest city. The German news agency DPA reports seeing rescue services taking people out of a building used by Jehovah's Witnesses. This is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. In the fight for democracy, at a turning point, Freedom House documents a global decline for the 17th consecutive year, one of the biggest concerns, media freedom. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias explains.
As freedoms continued to decline globally for the 17th consecutive year in 2022, U.S. nonprofit Freedom House noted a positive trend. Everyday citizens are demanding that their political and civil rights be preserved. Jana Gorohovska is a co-author of the Freedom in the World report.
We continue to see that around the world in the most repressive environments. We see that in China, we see that in Cuba, we saw that in Iran last year.
Gorohovska says that inadequate protections, intimidation, and even violence against journalists has left media freedom at risk in at least 157 countries and territories.
They inform citizens, they hold the powerful to account. So this is all really necessary for a healthy democracy.
She added that Russian censorship was particularly damaging when it came to reporting the war in Ukraine.
You couldn't call the war a war. You couldn't criticize the Russian military. And so as a result, most Russian independent media left the country and has to be based elsewhere.
The repression has also discouraged ordinary citizens from seeking access to reliable sources of information, even through a VPN, for instance, says Ksenia Kirillova, an investigative journalist and analyst at the Jamestown Foundation.
If you just share any truthful information about the war, you can be arrested and can be put in jail.
The Freedom in the World report, now in its 50th year, also highlighted declines in Burkina Faso and Myanmar. Freedom House's Jana Gorohovska.
We actually have seen people put to death in Myanmar for offering criticism of the coup and of the ruling military junta. We're really seeing an unfortunate situation in Burkina Faso because it means almost a complete destruction of political institutions and people's rights.
She noted that's a sharp contrast to Colombia and Lesotho, which are among the 34 countries to show improvements.
One aspect of sort of the bright spots we see are elections that are competitive and free.
The United States also has work to do in terms of combating polarization, something Gorohovska called warring.
But we also see efforts from both political parties to address that.
Amid a global struggle for democracy, Freedom House recommends governments make human rights a priority, including in bilateral engagements. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
Rights groups are warning that independent Turkish media faces fines and arrests after critical reporting of Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan's handling of February's deadly earthquakes. They said the crackdown is all about the upcoming presidential elections in May. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
Local media like Jin News were at the forefront of reporting on February's deadly earthquakes, highlighting what critics claim was a slow response of the government and emergency services. That reporting, they say, drew unwanted attention from the police, explains Jin News reporter Sema Çalak. She says the police took our press cars and then took us to the police precinct. We were kept there for 3 to 4 hours and were asked, "Why did you come to the quake zone?" According to rights groups, several journalists were detained and equipment was confiscated or even destroyed. The government insists there is no systematic policy against the media, claiming any abuses resulted from individual officers working in a difficult situation. But independent TV stations like Halk TV, which have been critical of the government's handling of the quake, were also targeted with heavy fines and temporary broadcasting bans for inciting public hatred. Halk TV News Editor-in-Chief Bengu Sharp Baba Eker. She says in Turkey, more than 90% of the media is under government control. So we knew that fines would come because we were giving the voice of the people and the voice of the earthquake survivors. International rights groups have condemned the fines, saying the TV stations are engaged in critical reporting and that the penalties are all about upcoming elections. Erol Önderoğlu, Turkey representative for the Paris-based Reporters Without Borders.
We should underline that this fine are targeting this main critical TV station before the elections, before the upcoming elections, which are supposed to take place on 14th of May.
Prosecutors have started using newly introduced legislation criminalizing disinformation on social media, a crime that carries jail time. With presidential elections, some journalists say things could get worse. warns Jin News journalist Sema Çalak. She says, I don't think the pressure of the government on the press will decrease, and I think it will become more difficult with the election process. As the death toll passes 50,000 dead, with millions more homeless, analysts suggest the government could attempt to control or suppress any reporting that is critical of their handling of the situation. Dorian Jones for VOA News, Istanbul.
Season 3 of the Basketball Africa League is here. Starting off in Dakar from March 11th to March 21st for the Sahara Conference, then heading to Cairo from April 26th to May 6th for the Nile Conference, and the excitement continues to build in the finals in Kigali from May 21st to May 27th. Tune in and follow the BAL starting this Saturday on The Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com and check out voafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition on our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Chinodofa in Washington. Have a great weekend.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
The United States is offering a reward of up to $5 million for information leading to the identification or location of Ali Mohammed Rage, a key figure of the Al-Shabaab terrorist group. The reward is offered by the U.S. Department of State's Reward for Justice, or RFJ, program, which is administered by the Diplomatic Security Service. Ali Mohammed Rage, also known as Ali Dir, is a native of Somalia born in Mogadishu in 1966. He is an important leader of Al-Shabaab, a member of its Shura Council, and the terrorist group's head spokesman since May 2009. He has been involved in the planning of attacks in Kenya and Somalia. Al-Shabaab is responsible for numerous terror attacks in Kenya, Somalia, and neighboring countries that have killed thousands of people, including U.S. citizens. This terrorist group continues to plot, plan, and conspire to commit terrorist acts against the United States, U.S. interests, as well as its allies and foreign partners. In previous actions, 19 months ago, Rage was designated a specially designated global terrorist by the U.S. Department of State. This means that all property under U.S. jurisdiction in which he has any interest is blocked and U.S. persons are generally prohibited from engaging in any transactions with him. Furthermore, in February 2022, the UN Security Council's Somalia Sanctions Committee added Rage to its sanctions list pursuant to paragraph 43A of Resolution 2093 for engaging in or providing support for acts that threaten the peace, security, or stability of Somalia. If you or anyone you know has information on Ali Mohammed Rage's whereabouts, please contact Rewards for Justice via Signal, Telegram, or WhatsApp at +1 202 702 7843 worldwide, or at plus